Hello, friends. Patrick McFarlane here of the Liberty Weekly podcast. Welcome back to another episode. I invited Jose Gallison back onto the show, and we had a great time talking. We really hit it off in the last few episodes, and our episodes together have been pretty popular, so it was good to get to talk to him again. I wanted to mention again that the Liberty Weekly podcast is a part of the Libertarian Institute, and you can check out our other shows on the Libertarian Institute, most notably Scott Horton. Of course, you got Free Man Beyond the Wall with Pete Quinones, Kyle Anselone and Conflicts of Interest, Keith Knight, myself, and Tommy Salmons as well. So go check that out at libertarianinstitute.org. All right, without further ado, here's my interview with Jose Gallison. Hey, everybody, Patrick McFarlane here of the Liberty Weekly podcast, and joining me back again is Jose Gallison of No Way Jose and the Liberty Movement. How's it going, man?
Going pretty good. Yeah, been straight killing it lately. You've seen that. I've done some cool shit lately. I've been really starting to come into my own, I feel like, a little bit.
Yeah, well, we had a free night, and I was thinking about we both did, and I was thinking about the last time that you were on the show. Those episodes that we did, they went pretty well. I think people liked it. So, and plus, you're an awesome guy, and we have great chemistry. So I thought I'd bring you on again. We'd shoot the shit, have some fun. But I guess I don't know if we ever really talked about, I think we did talk about why you started your podcast. We talked briefly, I think, about like how you became a libertarian, but we didn't really get into the whole like agorism part. So how did you kind of find agorism and like how do you practice?
I found it like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people have their stories of like how the coup changed them. And we kind of went into a little bit.
Yeah.
The coup, how it changed me is with my work, I'm salary. So like when they messed with, when it got really crazy, they did like dial back our like hours and stuff. So I had a whole lot more time in my hands and I was still getting money. So, I mean, I know this is like kind of shitty for a lot of people, but I had a lot more time in my hands. No economic issues really. So I started getting a lot of hobbies, doing a lot more shit, and I got more into reading. And also around the same time, I'm not gonna lie, I noticed a lot of issues like the political what was going on. You know, JoJo wasn't quite everything she was cracked up to be.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a whole lot of things that are like, this is kind of fucked. I'd been listening to Pete Quinones a lot, talking about agorism on his podcast, and I just finally like, you know what, I got some time. I'm gonna read these books. So I got Konkin's books, New Libertarian Manifesto, Agorist Primer. Later, much later, I read Agorist Class Theory, but pretty much just the two, which they're both really short. So if anyone's ever interested in it, it doesn't take much to just do a full dive on what agorism is and read the books. They're both pretty short books. They're probably like Anatomy of State type length. They're not very long. But yeah, I kind of got into that. I read them both. I really realized that like, you know, a lot of that shit resonated, especially with everything was going on, with everything shutting down and really being like, holy fuck, this dude is right. Like, this dude's right on the money. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, I guess it wasn't entirely from an emotional place like that, but it was very much like it really kind of brought it all into focus. And the dude had a lot of good ideas, and it kind of made sense in the current context of everything that was going on, you know? So
was it
done a dive in them? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. Well, I just mean like, so I have a confession. I actually haven't read those.
That's fine.
No. But I mean like for my own audience, I don't consider myself to be an agorist first. Like I always came from the Rothbard kind of Austrian economics point of view, but is it that in those works, he kind of predicts the state falling apart?
To some extent, I don't know if it's split like that. I mean, he does sort of, I guess. I mean, yes, to put simply, but like New Libertarian Manifesto, he kind of goes into his whole thing of like how he thinks this will go going forward and how the agora will grow. And he has the idea of the agorist revolution, which I think we touched on a little bit in things. I know I have some theories about how things will go going forward. And it's kind of a meshing of different things. And I think Konkin kind of had a bit good thing, like a good idea with how this is going to go going forward. And it kind of really makes sense with the way the state crumbles and how the black market or gray market kind of builds up. How things go forward. But yeah, I mean, it's basically, yes, he kind of did predict it. And that's a lot of what New Libertarian Manifesto, that's a big part of it, is, I mean, he kind of goes into what agorism is, but in New Libertarian Manifesto, he kind of goes into just naturally how the state will not even necessarily crumble, because he doesn't even necessarily think statism will crumble. He thinks it's just going to become like, I think he describes them as like bubbles, where it'll be like, and this is kind of where we talked about in our previous episode, not to be too referential to make it so people listening to this have to go back and watch it, but you should. We kind of went into that, how I think going forward, we're going to kind of see like maybe a return of, this is like decades from now, like a return of like kind of almost city states type deal, you know? And so like, it'll almost be like statism receding and like kind of how they will recede, but yet they will kind of like clamp down a little bit on what they do have. So, and yeah, I mean, he has the idea that statism never really truly goes away entirely. And yeah, I kind of made that a long answer, but yeah, I think it will. That is basically what New Libertarian Manifesto, the first book he goes into, is about a lot. So in Agorist Primer, he goes more into like definitions of what agorism is and stuff like that. But by the way, I'm glad you actually did mention that you hadn't read it, because I feel like a lot of people just like immediately have assumptions of what agorism is. And then that's where I feel like it's kind of shitty to be like, well, you don't understand for a lot of things, because I feel like there is a lot to agorism, and I think you do got to read it. I mean, not a lot, but it's kind of like how people have assumptions of like objectivism, and like it's kind of, I kind of make the comparison there. And like, people haven't read it. Not that I've read objectivism, but I don't normally get in arguments with objectivists or whatever the fuck. Mm-hmm. But I don't normally get in arguments with them because they know the material better than I do. And I try not to make assumptions about ideologies I don't know a whole lot about. And I feel like a lot of people do the same thing with agorism, especially. And then you're like, did you even read it?
So right.
It's like, yeah. I mean, not like I said, it's two short pamphlets, so it's not even that much. But some of the ideas, like, people will say stuff, and if you have read like some of those books, you know immediately, like, oh, they've never fucking read it. So they're like immediately jump to like, oh, you just want to sell weed or whatever. Fuck all the assumptions you hear about agorism, or you know. But yeah. So,
I mean, when I say like I have a confession to make, I think it's because on some level I've spoken a bit as an authority about agorism, like not as an authority, but it's like commenting on it and being like, oh yeah, you know, we should all be agorists and we should all be, you know, practicing counter economics and whatnot. But like, I know there's a lot of people, and you got to be accepting, because there's a lot of people in the liberty movement who are coming in who actually haven't even read Rothbard or, you know, Hoppe or Mises or anything like that. And it's not that they're not libertarians, you know. I would always suggest that people read the source material. But in a large level, you don't have to read the material to really kind of grasp the core concepts. But to speak as an authority about it, you probably should read it.
Yeah, and I also feel like if you're coming, because some people come at things from like a shitty angle, and they're like, oh, well, this or that. And you're like, these gotcha things. And you can just tell by the way they frame these questions, they don't even understand what they're like. Not even like as an authoritative, if you're coming at it as confrontational, like, you know, if you gotta, I don't know, I feel like what's the word I'm looking for? It's like kind of delusional to come at someone to challenge their ideology when you don't understand their ideology. It's just like, I don't know. It's like getting into, I don't know, I'm trying to think of another good example. It's just, but to challenge someone on their ideology and to, you know, strawman them when you don't even know what you're talking about is kind of I feel like it's a little bit arrogant. Arrogant was kind of the word I was looking for earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know, like, and I'm not saying you shouldn't ever like question people in these things, but just, you know, come at people with a little bit of humility. You know, I feel like that goes a long ways for a lot of things. So, because I have no problem if someone has questions, but if you can immediately come at assuming just because of the fact I say I'm an agorist or whatever. Because, and even then, within ideologies, people have slightly different things. For example, like within agorism, a lot of people think that political, like a lot of agorists consider like working in the political system as a violation of the NAP. I don't necessarily agree with that. And I don't even really remember what Konkin's stance was on it. Because I do think to some extent, like I feel like Konkin, since he's the one who came up with it, gets to define it. You know, and then like within that ideology, the stuff that he didn't define is kind of like there's that wiggle room. I don't remember if he said it was a violation of the NAP. I kind of take Spooner's take. I'm more that it's like a self-defense thing. I just think generally that self-defense doesn't work out in your favor. You know, so I think it's working within the political system, in my opinion, is 99 times out of 100 not going to work out for you. Like, I'm sure I could devise a hypothetical in which it would be smart. But I mean, realistically speaking, almost every single time, it's basically not, in my opinion. I might be wrong. I don't fucking know. You know,
so. I think the way that agorism truly wins is, you know, it's awesome to have actual agorists who are practicing and doing it in a directed way purposefully. But I think the way that it truly wins is when people act as agorists out of necessity when they don't even mean to. They're not politically motivated necessarily, but like if you look at the former Soviet blocs, people were agorists all the time, and they were the most brazen agorists, and they never even knew what agorism was. It's just, I'm participating in the black market because that's what I'm doing, or the gray market, too. That's what I'm doing because my life is so shitty, and the regime sucks so much that I just have to. I have to support my family. And, the socialist, communist politics and economics of, you know, the USSR is largely what brought it down in the first place. Not necessarily agorism, but that certainly played a big part, I would think.
Yeah, I generally try not to. I know a lot of people make that argument, and I think there is something to it, but I am not a history buff, so I generally try not to use the historical example. I may mention it in passing here and there, but I try not to lean too heavy into that one, because then a lot of people come up with... I know, for example, there was an episode that Pete did with... because he's had a little bit of a changing on his opinions when it comes to agorism lately that's pretty widely known. I know he had an opinion on... He did an episode on James Gentleman's podcast, Blackbird.
Yeah, yeah.
If anyone's interested, if you watch it, I'm not sure. And he kind of went into why he changed. That was a really good episode. And he kind of went into a little bit, like, so I'm not a history buff. He kind of went to, it's not that simple. Like when it came to that, there was like political stuff. And there, once again, there was another episode that I did with James where we kind of discussed that one and kind of went into our thoughts on it. I try not to lean onto it. Just to back up a little bit, you did kind of touch on though, kind of doing it out of necessity. Like, and that's like one concept Konkin goes into, is that like you should appeal to the people who, like, he kind of explains it as there are people who are already engaging in counter economics, but aren't necessarily philosophically there.
Yes.
So those would be your generic, you know, drug dealers, or maybe even like prostitutes or whatever, you know, people who are engaging in, you know, economic activity that is, you know, not on the up and up with the law, but isn't hurting anyone, you know? And then there's, on the other end, there's people that are like your generic libertarians who are completely in the white and don't, and, you know, and for some reason are like, I can't do illegal stuff, you know, or whatever, you know, and but are philosophically like they understand the difference between legality and morality. And he's like, you kind of have to appeal to both sides. And like for me, I kind of was that libertarian before, and I kind of actually was forced into getting into it. And I have my own agoristic type thing. I breed cats, hairless cats. And I mean, I've done an episode on that before on someone else's podcast. But yeah, I have I feel like such a douche when now I'm a podcaster. I'm always referencing other podcasts. Like, it's like a shortcut. I don't have to have that conversation all over again. But yeah, I breed cats. And we kind of got into it because my wife was she started having seizures, and so she's an epileptic.
Oh.
And around that time, we were concerned that she wouldn't be able to keep her job. And so we kind of were like, we need to start like doing something for income. And so then we started slowly building that up. We ended up getting a house that was kind of perfectly set up for it, and built that up slowly to where we make pretty good income. I'm obviously not going to tell what or how I collect my money, because fuck the feds. But, you know... Yeah, we kind of built that up, and it was out of necessity. And it wasn't even like, there was always this like part of me that was like, you know, I felt like, you know, we were always like, well, eventually we need to go legit, you know, like legit, legit, fully legit. Not to say I'm not going legit right now, wink, wink, you know, but for any Fed out there listening. But, and then as I kind of got into the philosophy of agorism, I was kind of like, well, why? You know, like, why? I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, one thing people kind of go into when they talk about agorism is they kind of think it's like it's black or white and you have to be either all in or all out. And that's not at all the case. Like, you're useless if you're in jail. Like,
right.
He kind of goes into a pretty you basically weigh your pros and cons. And like you don't look at it, because people look at it so fucking like binarily, where they're like, that's probably not, I don't even think that's a word, but they look at it so much like this is illegal or not illegal or whatever. And it's like, no, like, yes, there are things that are illegal, but it's like, but what is the penalty going to be?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you know you're going to make a good amount of profit off whether this venture is, maybe set up a slush fund for whenever you get busted. Cause they don't, most of these things that we're talking about, like these things where it's like gray market or black market type stuff, unless it's like something like really, really illegal, like drugs or whatever, for the most part, you're going to probably get a fine. You know, like if they fine you, like, you know, curbing taxes a little bit or whatever, probably going to get fined. They're probably not going to send you straight to the clink.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like you just got to take that kind of into account. And yeah, that's kind of So yeah, I mean, kind of get into like, that's kind of how it started for me. Like, I wouldn't even start being like, I'm going to be an agorist. I built up a side business and kind of was like, cause we knew we were going to need to hedge our bets for my wife's, you know, for her job. Like, she didn't think she was able to keep it. Luckily we were able to keep it. So now we have her job, my job, and our other job. So yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of how it worked out. I ended up kind of being like, you know, I was already doing it, but now I'm like philosophically like, oh, okay. You know, this is completely legit. Like, you know, like there's nothing to feel weird about. Like, I mean, which is weird to say, because I feel like if you're like already a libertarian anarchist type, you should already be like, well, fuck the state.
Right.
But for some reason, even still, people have this weird, like, well, this is illegal, or what if I get caught? And you're like, but it's like, well, what do you mean, what if you get caught? Well, why don't you look up and see what'll happen if you get caught? Or like, or, you know, not be an idiot and maybe, you know, work in cash or crypto or whatever. You know, there's so many ways to, you know, kind of dip and dodge around the state, you know. So,
well, and I think that when you're reading and talking about libertarianism to your friend, it's not real. It's an abstraction. But when the rubber actually meets the road, and when you're going to do stuff to actually piss off the regime, then things get a little more dicey. You know, I was thinking about, you know, one way that you could do it potentially is, there's this website called Local Bitcoins where you can meet up with folks and pay cash, and they'll send you their Bitcoins under the table. And then you could just store it in like a paper wallet or something like that. But that seems like, you know, one strategy. I'm just spitballing, but.
Oh yeah. There's a million different ways to do it. I mean, I literally sell cats.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, we were talking before, I still haven't even gone to crypto, which I did an episode with Sal for that reason, but yeah, I literally right. just, I'm so busy. I haven't even had time to sit down and set up a wallet. And even then, like half the shit that we went over, it kind of went in one ear and out the other already. Cause I'm just like, for me, I'm such like a tech idiot. That it's just like these things don't really stick in my head. I'm just like, oh God, I fucking hate tech.
it's a bit of a learning curve. Like, you know, I've been futzing around with it since, I don't know, 2018 maybe. And I'm still, you know, I'm still learning things, but once you start, I don't know. Anyways, you start watching crypto videos like on YouTube almost every day, and so you learn stuff, and it's just a process. So, but it really seems like, I mean, you touched on something really important that I think is big in agorism, is having these multiple income streams. And I know a lot of libertarians will talk about it, but it's really a lot about resilience. I mean, is that one word that you would use to like describe agorism, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of words to describe agorism. I mean, I feel like it's particular to every person. It's like, there is no like, this is agorism and that's it. But yeah, I do think it is like, really, it's just intelligent into multiple streams. You know, the more streams you have, the less dependent you are. And especially with something like agorism, where it is inherently kind of semi-risky-ish, you may need to divert from one revenue stream to another, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not that bad of an idea, really, agorism or not, to have multiple income streams. And especially in the current gig economy, you know, and the way things are, it's kind of people are already, like we went into a little bit, kind of people are already naturally sort of doing it. I mean, maybe it's not, you know, entirely, you know, because I mean, a lot of these things are like, I mean, I don't know exactly how like Uber works and how they pay you and stuff, but I'm sure it's like they have their own system and it's pretty much completely tracked. But for the most part, I mean, even then it like makes it, even from something that's on the up and up there, it probably makes it to some extent harder for, you know, the man to track it, you know, if you're doing something like that. Cause it's like, you could just probably not claim that. I mean, there are a lot of people who just don't claim it, you know?
And yeah.
I mean, I was listening to an episode of Unloose the Goose today, and they were kind of going into that a lot, but like, there's a lot of people just don't even file taxes. And I feel like a lot of people, I'm not saying maybe, you know, weigh your risks, probably not the smartest thing depending on who you are and what you're about, but I feel like people have this delusion of how powerful the state is. You know, it's like, they're just going to come and get you and it's going to be the end. They're not this omnipotent like being. Like, sure, if you're some high profile individual, yes, they probably will make an example out of you.
Right.
But if you're just some nobody, you know, that's just like, you know, Ubering and doing this and doing that other little gig, and, you know, like, you're probably making, I don't know, under 40K or whatever the hell, and you're just kind of, you know, living a meager lifestyle, you're probably fucking fine.
Yeah. And it's like, it depends on, yeah, how much do you have to lose, really, too? I mean, you have your freedom to lose, which is really important. But yeah, everyone needs to evaluate their own position and make a decision for themselves about what they're going to do. And I think that we kind of touched on having these multiple income streams, and you're totally right. It's like, you know, it's just a good idea to do regardless of whether you're practicing agorism or not. So I think that's something that wealthy people do, is they have multiple income streams. It's they accumulate capital and they establish multiple income streams.
Yeah. And I feel like people have this idea of the American dream, and I kind of fell into that. I mean, I got promoted to a pseudonym, so I'm not going to go into too much into my details, but like, I feel like I kind of fell in that trap as a young man, but like, you know, I have kids and I'm going to try to teach them that, like, you know, you don't have to do that. You can do like multiple things at the same time. You know, it's just this income, that income. But we have this like American dream of like, you got to get a job. You got to work it for 20, 30 years, whatever. And you got to retire, and you want to, and you're just having this one income stream. But it's like, it's just like, if you really evaluate that, like, for one, I feel like that's, I mean, especially coming from me, I mean, that might not be for everybody. Everyone's different. For me, it's kind of fucking miserable. I don't know. That's just kind of a boring existence. I mean, sure, maybe if you can have that idyllic 50s lifestyle and you can somehow set it up like that, great. But the problem is you're putting all your chips in one basket. And it's just, it's like, I wish I hadn't kind of fallen into that idea of the American dream from a young age and kind of had, like, you know, not thought I had to go to college or whatever the hell, and just, you know, got jobs and had multiple things going on at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, I could have started from a younger age. Like, I'm 29 now and I'm kind of starting to employ a lot of these tactics now. But I'm like, if I started this as 18, like, I'd be fucking killing it right now.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think that's, you know, I'm 27. I feel like that's part of the process of growing up too. Like, you know, if only we knew the things that we know now when we were 18, and if only we knew the things, and if only we knew right now the things that we will know when we're 52, you know, that would be really nice. But, yeah. You know, I guess some people grow up and they do have that leg up. They do the understand.
Thing, oh, sorry.
No,
I was going to say, the funny thing you say that, though, but then it's like, where did we get this information from? I mean, to reference fucking...
from failing.
Yeah, well, it was from your parents, from right. your yes. grandparents. Like, this is all stuff you got from them, like... And I think it was on Lucy Gissel, and they were kind of going to how they like the boomers, like just like how, oh, no, actually it was some Pete Quinones thing he was talking about with the boomers, and like, not to shit on boomers, not all boomers are shitty, but it's like, they are a shitty generation.
Yeah, fuck them. Like, no, <yeah. I'm>
like, they just are. Like, yeah. they've just fucked. And, like, I don't remember who it was. I think it was Pete Quinones was talking about how, like, at just every turn throughout their entire generation, somehow they've made it so even from their young age, the entire like thing has been about them. And I guess it's just because there's so damn many of them. Like, literally, it's their name, boomers. And so it's like they just had this delusion. And so they kind of had this, like, you know, this like fucking idyllic, you know, sort of semi 50s ish lifestyle where they had one job and they fucking did it. And then so now they're like kind of imprint that on others. And like, so that's why, you know, like, I grew up, like, it was pounded in my head that it was like, you need to go to college, you need to go get a job, you need to work that job, you need to have the white picket fence, you need to have kids, you need to do all that shit. And don't get me wrong, some of that, there's truth in there. Mm-hmm. Like, I think generally speaking, within means not for everyone, you know, I'm speaking generalities, it's good to get married, good to have kids, it's good to do, like, a lot of this stuff. It's good to have a house or some land, but, like, I feel like a lot of it's flawed thinking, and it's, like, also not for everyone.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like a lot of this shit we are pass on is just like just shit information. And you're like, yeah, it is like kind of this older, wiser thing, but not so much. They were kind of like, you also got to think about who you're getting their information from. But it's like, yeah. I don't know.
No, I think it's important to find your own path. And whether that path is through the white picket fence or whether it's through having an alternative lifestyle, you know, Keith and I did a different show where we didn't really talk about libertarianism, but we talked about the top five regrets of the dying. And there was a study where people surveyed people in hospice where they were on their deathbed, and they said, you know, what do you regret about your life? And a lot of people said, I regretted worrying so much. I regretted working so hard. And there were some other things, you know, but it's like, at the end of the day, when you die, you know, all the money in the world's not going to save you from death. You know, we're all going to die someday, and you're sitting there with your regrets. And sometimes, oh, maybe I would have foregone a bit more money if it meant having more meaningful relationships.
Yeah, and I'm starting to see that too. I mean, we're about the same age, I'm starting to. I feel like that kind of shit. I mean, I don't know. It's weird. It's almost like a midlife crisis, but not really.
Yeah,
maybe it's because I'm already life. Like, I'm already like a decade into a career. We talked before. So mm-hmm. it's like, so for me, maybe that is kind of like a, I guess that would normally happen for most people in their midlife, where I'm kind of just like, I'm starting to reevaluate what's important to me. And I'm kind of like trying to reorient and to go into regrets. I really regret not just doing the things I wanted to do earlier, because I kind of put all my chips into one basket. I mean, like, this is the thing I want to do, when like really my heart wasn't in it. It's just like, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And now I'm like, and it kind of goes into a little bit how we're talking about diversifying. It's like for example, right now I'm podcasting. I tried my hand at writing articles for a little while. I've done like this and that and this and that. And I'm just kind of like, you know, playing around, and like, it's not like I'm putting all my time into podcasting. This is totally, I'm not even making money from it right now. I'm just doing something I enjoy. But it's like, I feel like it also opens other doors. And it's like, I feel like if you just kind of like, I know it sounds kind of gay to be like, oh, chase your dreams. But I don't even necessarily mean chase your dreams. Just kind of like, kind of entertain your dreams. Maybe it'd be a better way to put it. Not don't sprint after them. Just kind of, you know, lackadaisically kind of be like, well, I'll go do this a little bit, do that a little bit. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's about, you know, kind of doing this, doing that. And I kind of wish I had done a little bit. Obviously, you know, don't throw away everything and be like, I'm a podcaster now or
right.
whatever, you know, you know, do this, do that. I'm sure for you, you've probably noticed that like doing this has probably opened other doors here and there for you. You know,
for sure. Yeah.
And I don't know. I just feel like in general, it's like, maybe I'm just, you know, I'm getting that point in my life where I'm just like, I just need to change things. I'm kind of like, you know, not to get all fucking, you know, sappy, but it's just like, I don't know. I'm just getting that point where I'm like, I don't know. I'm reevaluating what's important in my life at this point. And I feel like a lot of that kind of goes into, you know, between the COVID, like agorism, you know, just, you know, where I am in my career. Like, I'm kind of starting to look at these things and be like, yeah, this, you know, and also it's kind of made it more real. I feel like we're kind of getting to a point where you're kind of seeing like a collapse or something akin to it on the horizon. You're like, you know, maybe what I'm doing is not what you should be doing.
Right.
You know, I feel like a lot of people need to really take into account. And I'm not even saying there is going to be a collapse or whatever, but I do think we're in for a changing of the tide, or, you know, we're in for an interesting decade, I think. So I think you really need to evaluate where you're at, where you've got your shit at. You know, are you all in fiat? Do you only have one revenue stream? Like, I know all these things, and I'm not saying I'm perfect at all. I am definitely not. There are a lot of things that can be improved, but we're in an interesting times, and it's, if there's ever a time to reevaluate what's going on, it's fucking now.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, I want to touch back on that, but what you were saying before about the midlife crisis thing, it's like, it's really, I don't know if you ever read Jordan Peterson at all.
I've not read him, but I've watched a ton of his podcasts. I used to be really deep into like the Dave Rubin, like
the intellectual dark web.
Yeah, the intellectual dork web. Yeah,
the dork web.
I used to be really in that area for a while, and I mean, I feel like I, not to be a douche, I've kind of moved past it.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah,
I don't know. Just, I don't feel like, not to be mean to Dave Rubin, but I don't feel like he offers me a whole lot of intellectual anything anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like he's a great stepping stone for a lot of people in their journey, is the way I look at it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he still has some interesting stuff here and there that I'll watch, but
yeah,
you know.
I get that. I was never a big Dave Rubin guy, but Peterson, you know, he talks in his book, he talks about the order versus chaos, and it seems like when you're a young 20-something or 18, 19 years old, you have this the chaos of potential and the chaos of all the choices you could make. And that's terrifying because it's like, well, shit, it's so uncertain. It's like, what the hell am I going to do? And all you really want to do is find order and make things orderly. But sometimes you walk down that path and your options close up and doors close for you. And you're so committed down a path, you look around you and you're like, holy shit, I'm like a mile down this path now, and I don't even know if it's the right one.
Yeah, there's something there too. That is a pretty smart way to put it. Because I also feel like I remember being like 17, 18, and I just like, I don't know, in my head, I'm like, I'm a man now. I need to go do man shit. I need to get my life together. I need to do something. And I feel like, I mean, maybe it's a devolving of the family structure. Not that I have a bad family, but I don't know why we have this idea in society that it's like, once you're 18, you're a man and you're on your own, or you're an adult. And I do think there's something like should be something to having a family where you slowly break away. You know, it's like this, like this, like you're 18, you're done with high school, you're an adult and you figure it out. Cause like, I really wish that I had not been so quick to jump the nest, at least for me. I mean, I feel like a lot of, especially men, I feel like this is very much a man thing. Cause I know like both my sisters, they stayed at home for a long time. They got themselves settled. They got a job and then eventually they got married and then they left the house and so on and so forth. Whereas me, like, I was like, I'm a fucking man. I'm going to go be a man on my own and I'm not going to fucking take anything from anybody, you know? And I was like, I'm going to forge my own path. But I was so quick on finding a path that I was like, didn't even stop to think like, is this the right path? I was just like, I need to find a fucking path.
Yeah.
I need to get the fuck out of here. Cause I'm, you know, it's almost like a pride thing where it's like, I can't, you know, like, and it's, I feel like it's unhealthy because I do feel like, you know, like now, I mean, I have daughters. So it's like I said, it's kind of not the same, but if I had a son, I would really want to drive into him. Like, you can stay here as long as you need, dude. Like,
yeah.
Like I made a joke, like you're out of here when you're 18, but like, you know, like I don't want to just be like, go fucking get the fuck out of here. And like, whatever happens, happens now, you know, like, I don't know.
I feel like it's a struggle that is as old as time. I think for as long as human beings have had civilization, this, like, I'm sure that you could go back and study ancient Rome and find freaking writings about, you know, Cicero wanted his son out of the fucking house and his son said, fuck you, dad, you know, or, you know, Cicero went off and he joined the legions or, you know, I'm just, but, I'm thinking it's probably not unique, but we just the ways that we deal with it and the ways that we confront it change with all the moving pieces. But even, I mean, think about this, Jose, it's like, even this, if you had not made a decision that you could have taken more time to make your decision, but it's, if you're forced to go down two different paths or three different paths, sure. It's probably best to take one path and to stick with it. Better do that than not to make a choice. Not making a choice is probably the worst choice you could make.
But I also feel like to some extent that's probably a false choice because it's like kind of we went into earlier and how
yeah.
we have this idea that we have to pick a path, that we have to pick one job. I mean, I guess that's kind of a path in its own. I mean, it's getting a little bit overly meta, but you get what I mean.
Like, that's a good point.
Like, I feel like we've been driven into ourselves. You need to find your thing, your only thing. And it's like you could have multiple things. Like we talked to about Pete Quinones multiple times. How many fucking things does that dude do? Like,
right. Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have a thing. And I feel like most people, I mean, there are people who have a thing. Like Scott Horton, like don't get me wrong, it's maybe the best example because he has multiple things. But for the most part, his thing is foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but not everybody's like that. I feel like most people aren't like, I don't have a thing. I have things. And I feel like to be like, we're going to put all our chips in one basket is, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I mean, I get what you're saying, but sometimes I think things are false choices. And I feel like, I mean, when you're 18 years old, you don't fucking think these things through.
Right.
It's like, I need to get out of the house. I need to, you know, I need to have a job. Like, I can't get laid at my parents' house.
Well, you're right, though, because, you know, if you're walking in the woods and you see three paths in front of you, that's not how life is. I think you're right. Because when you're walking down the path, like, okay, when you're talking about, okay, do I pick job A, B, or C? You know, A might make me move to a different town, while B and C would make me stay here. In that sense, it is like, okay, I have three options. But life isn't really like that, because I could pick choice A and then have, like, an offshoot. You know, like, the analogy doesn't really fit with the paths in the woods, but you know what I mean. Like,
yeah,
choose path A, but also, you know, do these things on the side that I also enjoy.
Yeah. Or just fucking, I don't know, walk in the woods in between paths or whatever, cut in and out.
Right. Yeah. Cut. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Forge your own path, whatever the fuck. I don't yeah. know. We can get all sorts of metaphorical here.
Right. Yeah.
Shit, I get what you mean.
Yeah.
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 No, I don't know. Yeah, there's definitely a lot there. And I do think there's a lot of follies of like how we start out when you're young and you just got to get set down a path and you just go, you know, but yeah.
Yeah. It is, you know, being a man in society, it is strange because, you know, I do feel like a lot of people have talked about the feminization of men in our society, but it feels good to be a man. Like I'm sure most of our listeners are men. Maybe, you know, there's a few women that listen to my show, especially. But yeah, it is weird because, yeah, have you seen anything about like testosterone levels going down and sperm counts going down and stuff like that?
I've heard things here and there. I believe it. I mean, yeah. There's so many things. I don't know. We go the conspiracy route. The fucking throwing fluoride in the water. Or
right.
The fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I don't know how much I buy into that. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, I do. I mean, once again, speaking generalities, because a lot of people fucking read and go, but like, I do think for the most part, there is something to the traditional man. And I do think masculinity is a positive thing and femininity is a positive thing. That doesn't mean you have to fit that mold. Everyone's different. But for the most part, I do think it's, to some extent, traditional gender roles have their place in, you know, in history. Like, and I'm not saying every woman should be at home fucking cooking and cleaning or whatever. Like, my wife doesn't do that. Like, me and my wife both work full time. I'm not saying that there's something to these feminine roles. Because for some extent, I, you know, like, if someone breaks into my house, I'm not going to scream and say, honey, go take care of it. Like, there is something to being a man and something to being a woman. Within, like, and like, I don't know why I feel a need to caveat everything, but people are gonna get upset, like,
right?
Because I guess to some extent I don't give a fuck,
because it's the current, you know? It's the current year, man. It's the current year, that's why you have to caveat.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something to being a man. Like, I kind of went into this in my episode with Shane Azel and like, kind of like, you know, the warrior class and how, like,
yeah,
how there's something to that. And I do think it's a good thing. I feel like it's been perverted by the state, but like, I do think it is a beautiful, good thing for that, like, you know. You know, that you have men, they're young, dumb, and full of cum. And, like, that should be something that's used in a positive way. Like, that's just a natural part of life. Like,
right.
And I do think, you know, what normally happens is the military and the police comes and scoops them up and then, you know, turns that into a perverted thing. But, you know, generally speaking, you know, from our history, those would be the warriors that protect the tribe or whatever, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing. But now if you're over there fucking with other tribes for no goddamn reason, that's a different story.
Right.
Know?
Yeah.
But, yeah. So...
Do you think that everything that we just talked about in terms of gender roles and masculinity, do you think that has something to do with libertarianism? Is that stance, that opinion of yours, does that have to do with libertarianism in any way?
I don't know. I mean, not necessarily. I mean, because I broadly define libertarianism as falling within the nap. I do think there is something too, because it's like this goes into like kind of Hoppe and like how like you know, oh, I totally lost my train of thought, but like, how, like, he kind of goes into the thoughts of how you need to, like, have a, like, for libertarianism to work, kind of need to have the right culture. And I think there's something to that, but also within Hoppean theory, you can have your property type areas, and like, there would be the spots that are like the deviants or, you know, whatever you want to call them. And, you know, fucking, right. I don't know. I mean, I'm totally wrong. You know, the beautiful thing about if we actually had a true fucking free, you know, state or whatever, you know, like, not state, but if we had a free world, like, we would actually know. We wouldn't be sitting here debating like whether traditional gender roles or whatever the fuck, what's right or this or that, because the natural cream of the crop would rise. You would be able to tell, be like, well, this little fucking, you know, area of private property which has these people living in there, they're kicking ass. This is probably the place you want to go. And
right,
you know, naturally that's going to kind of develop its own problem, this own sort of culture, and you would be able to kind of see. I just generally think that it's kind of like the a little bit kind of similar to the ANCOM ANCAP thing. Maybe not ANCOM, maybe like ANSOC, because then you get into ANCOMs and they don't believe that, they believe it's violent to fucking, you know, assert property.
Right.
Tankies. You know, property claims. Yeah. But like, if you're someone who is like an ANSOC, anarcho-socialist or whatever, and you think that if the state withered away that magically everyone would just gather in communes, I think you're wrong, but I, you know, who fucking knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the state goes away and we all just, you know, break up into little communes and, you know, we throw off a private property, but not in like a way of like, we will assert violence on others if they don't, you know, we're like, okay, whatever, man, you go do that over there, you know? But like, my point being, I don't know, maybe I'm completely wrong and there isn't anything to traditional gender roles. And in a true free society, it would just be like, you know, that there would be nothing. Maybe we'd all just be super effeminate and whatever, you know, like, I don't fucking know. I doubt it. I feel like, so that's why I kind of say it doesn't really have much to do with libertarianism. Sort of not. I guess it depends on how you look at it. Cause I do think that it's like, to some extent, to have a functioning free society, it has to do with the culture and having a good, healthy, maybe not entirely like, maybe that's not the right way to put it, but like a semi morally upstanding, you know, to some extent. I don't know, but I could be kind of entirely wrong. I don't fucking know. Maybe it could be, you know, in a free state, like fucking, you know, it could be the, what some people consider the deviants or the, you know, the non-gender conforming people that, you know, rise to the top and somehow have a completely functioning society. Kind of doubt it. I'm not saying I have any issue with those people. I think they have their function within society to some extent. I mean, some are kind of like, what the fuck are you doing?
Well, on some level, you know, maybe they're the creative types that are at the tip of the cultural spear or something like that, you know. And but that's the beauty of decentralization, you know, is in our current system, it's one law for everybody for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least our, you know, in the United States, we try to have the states be different. That's gotten less and less throughout the years. But yeah, and I guess one of the reasons I asked that is because I've talked about thick versus thin libertarianism, you know, and it's like, okay, well, do you believe that libertarianism is anything more than just the NAP and private property rights? And
no, I don't know.
people like us, yeah, we don't, but social justice warrior libertarians, which do exist, like I'm thinking LP types, some LP types, you know, they would say that, you know, libertarianism also has social justice attached to it. And but on the other hand, Lou Rockwell, I was reading The Left, the Right, and the State, I think it was, and he has attached a lot of his cultural ideas, conservatism, to libertarianism. And it seems like he justifies it by using Hoppe and Mises and arguing from, you know, their writings that, like, oh, well, we can't have a libertarian social order unless we also have conservative social values. I hope I'm not strawmanning him, but
I know I've never read a lot of Lou. I mean, if that is the case, I feel like I could kind of see where he's coming from, because I could see, I mean, I doubt that he's saying that we need to be like somehow, you know, in some way apply force to, you know, stop these people.
Oh,
I can understand
he's
him
not.
Making the case that we should somehow try to influence the culture to maybe look down upon that. I don't necessarily, I mean, it depends. You'd have to get into specifics, because I mean, I want to be very clear. I have zero issues with trans people, gay people, where I don't give a shit. Like,
right.
But at the same time, like, at the end of the day, if you're not bringing the NAP, I don't give a fuck what you're doing.
Right.
Like, I generally don't. Like, I will make the case that I like, you can be racist and be libertarian or be a true libertarian.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care. If you don't want to break the NAP, cool. Good for you. Like, I'm not one who thinks that, like, memes break the NAP or some shit. Like, that's just silly. Or being racist breaks NAP.
Hang on a sec there, Jose. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the portion of the show where I tell you how you can help support this content. And I don't know if you've noticed, I don't know if you've been following me on Twitter, but you are hearing these interludes through my new Shure M7B microphone. It's the same one that Joe Rogan uses. It's kind of like the gold standard in podcasting. So I was able to upgrade my mic, and this is because of help from Patreon supporters. I stashed away Patreon support and was able to purchase this upgrade. Trying to think about the next thing I want to upgrade, and I think it might be my camera, although I do like my camera. Maybe some lighting, not sure yet. So you can help support this content on Patreon and Subscribestar and Float.app. You can help support with Bitcoin through a monthly donation. So you can find all those links at libertyweekly.net/support. That's the one-stop shop. I've also been releasing daily exclusive content on Library, and you can go over there. You can get library credits and support my content with LBC. Library really runs on the users, because the users donate their LBC and invest it in content that they want other users to see. So I really do believe in Library. Go on over there. You should be watching on Library instead of YouTube. Go on over there. You can find my content there and help support this channel at no cost to you, because you just get LBC through using the website itself. So libertyweekly.net/LBRY. Also, if you like Murray Rothbard and you like those Murray Rothbard Enemy of the State t-shirts, I designed my own with the polygons design, and you can get that at libertyweekly.net/Rothbard. I was wearing one in a new episode that you will see coming out next week. It's really awesome, guys. I think you love it. And so go check that out. Any of the proceeds will go towards new equipment upgrades. All right. And non-monetary ways you can help support this content is by sharing with friends, liking, reviewing, you know, all that good stuff. Okay. So without further ado, back to the show. What I was getting at with Lou Rockwell is that it just seems like, you know, a lot of the things in some of the essays that he's written about, it's like the breaking up of the family unit and how, like, second or third wave feminism has been bad for like Western society and liberty values, and like the courts siding against traditional marriage by supporting divorce and things like, you know, think about your traditional, like some traditional conservative views like that.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. Like, I definitely, definitely do. And like I said, it is one of those things that, like, if we had a true free society, we probably would know for sure. I mean, my instincts tell me they're the conservative cultural view, for the most part, is probably pretty damn on point. And that's not to say that we shouldn't have any of these people with differing views. Like, for example, like, I think I've talked about before, like, you know, scientifically speaking, they've shown that, like, say, like, gay people tend to come from families that have, like, I think like a more like it's usually like I think it's like the third, fourth or fifth brother or son that they like they've shown statistically is more likely to be the gay man. And it's kind of like it makes sense from an evolutionary perspective that it'd be like, well, we need less breeders. And so it's like there's a role for that. So I think there is something there to where it's like, you know, I don't think necessarily entirely the conservatives are completely true, but I think they're kind of on somewhat the right track to some extent. Like, I think there is something to masculinity, to femininity. Like, I think these are things that have developed over thousands of years. So, like, I do think there's something to that. And it is like a, and like some of these generic, like, cause I mean, a lot of like what conservative, like, cultural norms are is like, you should like take care of your family. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's, I mean, I feel like we're kind of talking in broad strokes. So, like, it's kind of like, I'm obviously, I don't agree with everything, specific, but like, they're kind of on the right track to some extent. And this isn't me saying, like, oh, we should get rid of the homos. Like, that's not at all what right. I'm saying, like, at all. Like, or the trans or whatever. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't really care as long as you aren't imposing your will on anyone else. I genuinely don't care. I just think, like, for a properly functioning free society, that most likely it would probably select out for those some of those things. Not all of them. I don't think it's this, like, some of this wokeism that we see now. I don't think that is a proper way for, you know, like, you know, everyone's brought up, I mean, I'll be the 80th person who's brought up, you know, Mr. Potato Head shit. Like, I don't think stuff like that is stuff you would see in a free society. I don't think anyone's gonna give a fuck if that potato identifies as a male or a female. Like, it's a fucking potato. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's like I said, it's kind of hard talking broad strokes, but I do think there is something to that. I think that you need to be, like, to some extent, like, generic, like, cultural, or more, what are the words I'm looking for? I'm kind of tongue-tied. But yeah, I think Lou Rockwell's onto something.
Yeah.
I mean, I could be wrong, though. It is one of those things where it's just like you kind of got to run that experiment and see what works out. I could be entirely wrong. Who fucking knows? I think they're somewhat on the right track, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm kind of putting you on the spot a little bit. It was like, but I do get it, and it's like, you know, over thousands of years, it's like, maybe I'm being ignorant of history, but I would say, generally speaking, that the traditional family unit has been the norm for all of human history. And it's like now, you know, generally speaking, that served us pretty well in society. I mean, look at where we've come to, you know. Yeah, I do think it's interesting. I usually kind of make this, I haven't talked about this specifically, like cultural things that I consider to be outside libertarianism. But I kind of give the disclaimer. It's like, look, you know, the same as you, it's like, look, I have my own views on certain things, but it's like, that isn't libertarianism per se. But the interesting thing about Lou Rockwell is I don't know if he's saying that is libertarianism, that has to be part of it, or just that conservative social values are more likely to create libertarians, which I don't know if I agree with that or not. I think generally I do, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of dicey because it's like you kind of get into semantics a little bit, but yeah. I get what you're saying. Yeah. But I think generally speaking, I think it's a little bit, I don't know. I'd have to read, I'm kind of speaking on someone I haven't read a lot of. I know a lot of Rube Rockwell, and pretty much anytime I've ever heard him speak, I've kind of been like, yeah, I'm tracking everything you're saying, but I'm not someone who's listened to a ton of them. I listened to probably, I would say, a lot, but I've never one who's gone down that trail. I mean, I feel like I'm still working a lot of this sense. Like, I'm reading, I just finally cracked into Rothbard's Ethics of Liberty.
Yeah.
And like, good I just one. Finally got around to it. I feel like I'm fairly well read, but there's still a lot of those ones I need to go back to. So like, this may sound, this is not a slight at all to Lou Rockwell, but if within the required reading, I feel like he's in the top, but he's lower towards the top, and I still have more to crack to before I get to Lou Rockwell. So, you know, and even then there's all other, because I'd like to at some point go into like some of like the communist stuff and stuff like that. So I haven't read a lot of Lou.
Yeah. But,
and he's not someone, like I said, not slight at all. There's so many fucking people to read. He's not at the top of my list.
Yeah.
But I have heard him speak a lot, and I think he's very interesting to listen to, and I've kind of agreed with most of them. But I get what you're saying. I do think is he saying that, like, you know, to create libertarians you need these, you know, cultural norms, or is it like that? I mean, I would assume that he's like, I would see it as that doesn't necessarily tend to create libertarians or not. I would see that as like, these are the ones who's going to create functioning societies, is the way I would see
it. A better society, yeah, for liberty, I think.
Yeah. And I could see how maybe he's also making the case that then the ones who don't have that will devolve back into statism, perhaps. I mean, maybe it's kind of, you're getting some of the, I don't know, I'm kind of like, so many different ways you can go with it.
Yeah.
I mean, generally speaking, in the day, people should do whatever the fuck they want.
Like, right. Yes.
But
yes,
with that comes responsibility. And I think that's a lot of what these, I feel like that's a lot of like this wokeism and shit like that comes with, is this like, we don't want the responsibility or whatever. There's a lot of is implied there, you know? So, I don't know.
The victim culture. Another thing, let me see what you think about this, is that I've been hearing in podcasts lately kind of this idea that the culture war itself was created as a distraction to, I mean, of course, we know this, I think, from, and this is something we've been living through and knowing for a while, but it's so apparent that when this wokeism shit really came into effect, it was building up, but Occupy Wall Street was the moment where it really was injected into the public consciousness. Because if, you know, I was a freshman in high school when this all happened in 2008, I think, sophomore maybe, but Occupy Wall Street happened, and then all of a sudden you get people like super lefties and Ron Paul folks uniting together on Wall Street and protesting and really scaring the establishment, I think. So what I think they did is that they injected identity politics into it for reals to get people to fight with each other and to distract them from, you know, who the real enemy is, because they were starting to figure it out. Because in the financial crisis, it was so clear who the enemy was and what the banks were doing and the government was doing. So do you have any thoughts about that, or what do you think?
Yeah, I have kind of like 2 points in that. I think it's entirely right. I completely, but I feel like we even have an even better modern example. And we've touched on it in our last episode together. You look at the fucking George Floyd riots and how they started.
Right.
There was a legit, for a small moment of time, there was this window of unity of like, fuck the cops. And it was like, yes, there were still some people who were pushing their race peddling bullshit. But for the most part, it was like, no, fuck these guys, because they kill people.
Yeah.
Like, they do shit like this. Fuck them. And there was this unity. And then it just kind of like, kind of devolved. And I feel like you could kind of tell like what was being injected into the media and such, you know, cough, cough, Operation Mockingbird, cough, right. Cough, you know, and like,
well, it's not only because the cops kill people, but it's because the cops locked us all in our fucking houses, and conservatives were starting to notice that.
Yep. And then they, what started as what this like nice, almost for me when this first happened, I was like super excited. I'm like, oh my God, this is like unity. And then this slowly became a division all over again. So that's a good example. But another point I wanted to get at is it goes both ways. And this Dave Smith also touched this too. And this is kind of, I mean, I know Sal Mayweather had this tweet not too long ago, where he kind of, to bring back to agorism as well, where he kind of went into like, you know, how like, oh, look at Bitcoin, look at this, look at that, all these like successes of agorism. And he's like, what's the LP doing these days? I'm pretty sure someone just called Dave Smith a racist. And it's like, kind of fucking fair. Like, and it's kind of the thing with like the political stuff too, where it's like they get so sucked into this, like these like silly games. Like, you look at the LP or the LPMC, and what are they doing right now? They're fucking shitting on Archie Flowers on Twitter. It's like they got sucked in the culture war. It goes both ways. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just the one, like it also distracts the attention of the one side towards the other, you know? Like, yeah, it cuts both ways. And it is hard too, because like I feel like this kind of touches into, I don't know if you've been paying attention to what's going on with this like neocon shit on Twitter right now.
Yes.
This kind of opens another door.
Yeah.
And I've kind of been talking about this to some of people in like a group chat that I have, the Tower Gang, you know, hashtag Tower Gang, you know, if anyone's paying attention out there. you know, I just, you know, here's my shout out. And we've been talking in there a lot about like the debates and stuff. And my thing is I get the utility of addressing these things when they come up. I feel like this is a good example, you know, say with like Archie Flowers or some of these like shitty, like the Loser Brigade types.
Yeah.
I do think there's utility in addressing it and being like, fuck this, like this is bullshit. But at some point you get to a point where you're just feeding it and you're also preventing yourself from doing useful shit. Cause for example, to bring it back to LP or like even like Dave Smith, like this dude could be, I mean, I'm sure he probably is. I mean, I'm not even saying he isn't, he could be shitting on the fucking cathedral right now. And he is, but I feel like the attention is on this infighting, whereas it could be on him shitting on Hillary Clinton or whoever the fuck, you know? And that's probably where it should be. He should be lobbing those bombs like they've been telling us they're going to. And I kind of want them to, you know? So, fuck, I had a train of thought. God damn it, I lost my train of thought. What the fuck was I saying before that?
Yeah, well, I mean, just all the stuff with, you know, libertarian infighting. Not just that, but getting caught up in the culture war. I think it does go both ways, and I think you're right. One thing that I kind of struggle with when I think about is how it's still very important to fight back against this cultural Marxism, for lack of a better term. I know some people hate that term, but
don't get consumed by it.
Don't get consumed by it, but but it's so predominant in the culture that you have to fight back against it. Because if politics is downstream from culture, and I don't think that's always the case, I think that's taken for granted that that's true. I don't think it's always true. But if politics largely is downstream from culture, you have to fight the culture war. I mean, you got to push back.
I remember my point now. But
what is it? Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. I remember what I was bringing this back full circle to the neocon debates going on now. And like, cause now everybody's trying to debate this like one neocon guy. Cause there's kind of this like small resurgence of neocon thinking and these like Zoomer types or whatever.
Ace said this, but who in the hell under like 30 would call themselves a Zoomer?
Or I guess he is like roughly our age, but he just strikes me as is Zoomer
the real term for a certain?
I don't know. I guess he's about our age, but whatever. It's still weird. He's like 27 years old. And he looks like he's in his mid fucking 40s. Like, I don't know. It's weird. And he's wearing a fucking suit, like, and shit. It's just really fucking weird. Anyways, my point I was getting at is, like, because we were talking in the group chat, and a lot of them were like, we should just ignore him. And I think there is it's a tactics issue. I do think when you have these resurgence of these, like, these shit, like, whether it be Fakertarians, whether it be fucking the Loser Brigade, whether it be neocons, you know, they're bubbling up. I do think you should address it. You should slap it down. But at some point, you got to fucking ignore it. Because, right. Like, I do think that... Like, for example, your boy Keith, he debated him.
Yeah.
And I mean, not to shit on Keith. My opinion of that debate is I think he did well, but I think in the perspective of debate, I think he was too focused on making his point and not focused enough on shooting down their points. Because I feel like the point of a debate is to show what – it's not so much that you need to prove your point. You need to show people why the other people are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of the point of debate because, like – I mean, don't get me wrong, because if you're an ANCAP watching Keith debate it, you're like, yeah, he's fucking right. But if you're like someone in the middle of the road or like a fucking neocon, you're going to be like, I don't think it would really sway you because it's almost just, you're just preaching to the choir type thing.
Yeah.
But now if you prove to them like logically they're wrong, then you're like, oh, okay. But you had him, you had Clint, and then now Ace. And I think honestly, in my opinion, like Ace was the one who was the most successful, which I don't know if you've seen that debate. But
if you could call it that, him, yeah,
which I think that was legit, like just clowning him, just prove, like showing to him why it's just completely fucking ridiculous,
yeah.
like just clowning on him, and that, like just showing like we don't even respect you enough to address it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think I do think maybe like one or two people should debate him. Like I know Shane Hazel was talking about it, and I think that would be perfect, like someone who's like been in the wars, and to be like this is why this is fucking bullshit. But at some point, like what do we have, like 1, 2, 3 tops more people. At some point, we gotta fucking ignore this dude.
Right.
Don't even think he's at 1,000 followers. Like, at some point, you have to be like, yo, just fucking ignore these people and move on. Well, and, like, you're just allowing yourself to get caught up, like, with these little fucking things. And don't get me wrong, I agree, they should be addressed. Like, but at some point, you just gotta fucking be like, nah, we're done. We're moving on. Like,
I wonder how much of a following he's gained because of it. Because of this.
I don't think much, which I actually had the same thought, and I checked his following. I still don't think he's cracked 1,000.
Well, and he said, I think he has a small enclave of friends who support him on Patreon. Maybe because he's the only neocon content producer out there, period. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to, I guess you kind of get at the heart of like, well, what is the goal of a debate? You know, I think that Keith's goal was to back up in, I think, no, I know this because I helped Keith prepare for that debate. I know this, that his...
By the way, I'm not shooting Keith.
No.
He's super smart.
No.
I'm just saying for the purpose of debate. Go ahead.
Right. No, I just mean his goal was not to convince the neocons. And I think it came out in the debate is what you're saying. His goal was not to convince the neocons. It was to make our guys feel like we were well represented, that our point came across and was argued well. So we had a multiple guys that did good jobs in that debate. That was it was entertaining, you know.
Oh, it was entertaining. It was still entertaining. But I guess for me, being like kind of autistic, I was like, for me, the purpose of a debate is to move people on the margins.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you're just preaching to the choir, all you're doing is, you know, throwing your base red meat kind of deal.
Or
whatever the fuck. So which is great. I do think there is something to, you know, preaching to the choir, because I don't remember who it was. I was listening to somebody not too long ago, and they said, you know, I think it's Tom Woods. He's saying the prior still needs to be preached to, you know, like they still need it too. We need it. But I don't know about you, but most of us ANCAP types or like agorists or whatever the fuck you want to call us, we consume the fuck out of that content. So we get plenty of our, we read our gospel plenty.
We get the red meat. Well, and to your point, I do think, you know, the purpose of a debate, I don't know. Do I have a standing on this? I think like if you listen to Stefan Molyneux, he'll say that the purpose of the debate is to find truth.
No. It's kind of Machiavellian in a way. It's more about
fucking somebody up.
I think the way I see it is to, I mean, there's multiple tactics. I think one of the tactics, like I said, with Ace was a good tactic, to be like, you know, just show them to be a joke, make them a clown.
Yeah.
But I do think I would love to have Keith go at it again with the fucking intent of destroying his argument, because that was what I want to see. Because he did so many times where he would just do like fallacious bullshit, and Keith didn't call him on it. And I was like, I know Keith could, but I think he was just really, I'm sure he was nervous. I mean, I would be nervous too. I'm not at all trying to shit on Keith.
Yeah.
He probably did a much better job than I would have fucking done. But I was just like, Keith, use that autistic energy to fucking kill him.
weaponize that autism.
Which, don't get me wrong, he did a good job. I think he did a good job arguing our point, but the problem is what I wanted him to do was to argue against his, like, Kevin's point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, when you have someone presents fallacious reasoning, you need to fucking put their balls in a vice grip and be like,
and just
what?
Squeeze it.
What? Your reasoning is bullshit.
Right. Yeah. You're right. I think that at some point in time, we have to take Kevin and put him to bed and just move on with it. Maybe I wasn't supposed to name drop him, but am I feeding the fire by name dropping? But
no, I don't think so. I think we're pretty, like I said, I don't think it cracked his following at all. Cause you know, like I'm sure mostly ANCAPs or libertarian types follow this. There's not like they're going to go to his page and follow him. They might like up his view count, but what does that mean? Like, I mean, it's not like YouTube pays them based on view count. They pay if you do get money, I think it's based off subs, right? I haven't even got to that point, so I'm talking out my ass.
I think it is. I think it is view count.
But let me
ask you this: do you think that there was anyone watching that debate who wasn't either an ANCAP or a neocon?
That is a fair point. That was one point that like kind of stumped me a little bit in some of the group chats I've been in.
Yeah,
they're like, yeah, but you say that, but it's like everyone watching it was a fucking like was a one of us. So I was like, yeah, you're right. But at the same point, like. Then at that point, why even fucking debate him?
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, you're but right. At that
day, then Keith is totally right. You're just trying to come on and be like, hey, you know, kind of almost show off to your buddies, which, you know, because if it's only your buddies watching, you know.
Yeah, I think that was like my impression of it. Or you know how you want to get on Twitter, and it was like in a way, it was like I don't know how Keith had initially been brought into it. If someone tagged him into the thread and it was like, oh yeah, Keith's here. My boy Keith is going to fuck you up. And so now Keith's like, okay, well, I got to go fuck him up then, you know?
Yeah.
So how do I get into these Twitter private? Is this so? There's a whole world of private Twitter groups out there that I have no idea how to be a part of.
Dude, I will add you. I will add you as soon as we get off this.
Fucking add me, yeah.
I will add you to Tower Gang. You can start towering the fucking towering people. We towered. Okay, I probably shouldn't send that one. We happened to send a string of senses that spelled out "send nudes" to AOC today.
Nice.
Yeah, no, we probably have like 3 to 5 towers going on a day. We've had some fucking beautiful ones. It's fun just to fuck with people.
Yeah, that sounds great. So what do you like? Do you assign letters to each person?
I mean, the funny thing is, okay, I get, I mean, we're like,
it's a spontaneous order.
An hour deep into this podcast.
Yeah, so yeah. Like,
if you've watched this long enough, you kind of deserve to be in on the secret of Tower Gang a little bit. Because with Tower Gang, it's like, part of the beauty of Tower Gang is I feel like most people see these towers and they assume they're completely just like anarchy that just arrives out of fucking like just bubbles up. Just this beautiful like, oh, someone put an R. No, someone put an E. And someone put a T. And someone put an A. And someone put an R. And someone put a D. I mean, some of those do happen that way. And to some extent, there are like people who jump into towers. But a lot of these are fucking group chats. Like, they're just people being like, you know what? Let's go. They'll be like, literally be group chats of like 20 plus people or whatever the fuck in each one. And they'll just like all day be like, someone's up like, look what I found. Let's fucking hit him. Like, and we'll fucking, you'll hit him with towers. And yeah, it is like, I mean, it's not entirely like, all right, now you. They'll be like, all right, this is what we're doing. And we'll go, you know? But yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. We've had a lot of crazy ones. Like, God, we hit Biden today with a VR ace. Just like, you know, I don't know if you know Ace Arcus.
Yeah,
we're kind of
yeah.
slowly devolved. He's slowly becoming less of a person and more of an idea. He's becoming our V.
That's wonderful. Very cool. Yeah,
which I'm totally pushing it big time because I'm like, I'm big into that, like, you know, like the Vinarmani, like magic type shit. And I'm like, I want to push this. Like, create a symbol. Like, fucking create some sort of calling card that, you know, we can, you know, fall behind. Like, we're all ace. Like, right now my name is Ace Galison on fucking Twitter.
Oh, really? I didn't even notice that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, no, like, we're all, like, a lot of people are putting, like, ace as our name. So it's almost like this, like, you know, group thing. Yeah, no, it's a whole thing. And, we hit him with We Are Ace, and then we hit him with all these fucking, like, V for Vendetta memes and GIFs and shit after. Like, yeah.
I have to say that for how toxic Twitter is and how much I hate the platform, the best of the Liberty movement is on Twitter.
Yeah, I actually only got on Twitter because I started podcasting.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not gonna lie. I started, and I'm like, this is fucking bullshit. This is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, really dumb. And then, like, as you gain followers and as you follow more people, it, like, I mean, the algorithm works where it curates your content and you're like, and it just becomes better. I'm not gonna lie. I fucking love Twitter now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I love bullying like fucking politicians and shit or some local PD somewhere on the other side of the country or whatever the fuck, you know, it's just so much fun. I don't know. I'm going to totally add you to these group chat later and you're going to have fun with this.
Yeah, you should. I'm excited about it. It's, the wonderful thing about Twitter and like other social media platforms is that it allows regular folks to stick a middle finger right at the politicians for everyone to see. For you know, people with power and the politicians, it's pretty cool. It's like, it's a unique thing in history now.
Yeah, no, it's pretty goddamn awesome to be like, you know, fucking shit on these politicians and sometimes they respond. Like, we've had, like, multiple, like, journalists, like, freak the fuck out or not necessarily, like, I guess it wouldn't be shut down their account, but, like, lock their account to where only certain approved people can see their content. Like, I mean, it's funny. We've had some people, like, freak out, like, we're, like, domestic terrorists. Like, it's just, like, all we're doing is, like, saying shit like, oh, enemy of the people and just towering it on their fucking account or whatever the fuck. Like, I mean, that's probably one of the more popular ones. So.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It is kind of good too to develop like mantras of like towers or like common towers. That way you can then draw on the normies. So it's not even just your people. I don't know. I'm actually excited to add you to this group chat because you're going to have fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no,
it's a lot of bullying politicians.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. Well, man, I'm glad to have you back on the show. You want to just tell people where they can find your work?
I am on the No Way Jose YouTube channel. I'm also on Anywhere podcast or app pretty much. under that banner. I also have the Liberty Movement YouTube channel, and it's also on BitChute as well. And the Liberty Movement, the idea of that is it's like we were trying to do like cultural, non-political content. So like probably about half my content goes up there. So if I'm doing a episode on like my most recent episode that went up there was an episode on how to podcast, like how to start a podcast or whatever. And that went up there because it's cultural, non-political. But like this one, we went a lot of politics. Like, so if I put this on my page, like this is not going to go up on there.
Yeah.
So the idea of that, we also have, it's like a rotating group of shows on that. Like we have your buddy, fucking Daniel Elwood is on there. You know, The Last Nighters, he's does a movie review. So I put up episodes, old episodes of his up there. I also have a parenting show on there. And so anyone out there who's watching and is like, has something that fits that banner of like cultural, non-political, say you have a sports show. And you don't, and you're a liberty-minded individual, and you don't really ever get into politics, and you want somewhere to promote it, like hit me up, I'll throw it in there. But it's my little plug for that. If you want to hit me up, email, you know, thelibertymovementglobal@gmail.com. Patreon, if you want to give me money. I finally got my second patron today. That was awesome. You know, hey, it is what it is. Yeah. No Way Jose 2020 on Patreon. I also have endthefed.app where you can support me with crypto. I'm No Way Jose 2020 on there as well. That's a new upstart, so I highly suggest going to check it out. Very bare bones.
I got to check that out.
Yeah. So definitely check it out. And yeah, that's all I got. Oh, like, share, subscribe, all my shit. Oh, I don't know why I'm saying that. I'm saying like it's my episode. I'm fucking zoned out.
Just hey, going do it.
Droning it.
Bro, do you have library? Are you on library?
No, I'm waiting until I hit 300 subs because I think when you hit 300 subs, it'll fucking like – I don't want to have another thing I'm manually updating, and I think it will sync it when you hit 300 subs.
Oh, so, you have to hit the magic number. I don't know.
Unless it's changed. I looked into it a while back, and it was like you had to have a certain amount of subs before it would auto-sync for you. And I'm like, I do not need another thing that I have to manually upload. I mean, I'm all about it, but I want it to sync to my YouTube channel first.
I've been manually updating shit. So – okay, well, anyways, that's a topic for another time on my side. But, yeah, well, thanks for coming on, bro. I really enjoy our conversations, and I think you're doing great work. So we'll do another one in the future.
Hell yeah. All right, we'll see you.
See ya.